Some people lost some bread. Yeah. Someone nearly died. Yeah. Someone just died. Yeah. Police, they come, army, they come. Yeah. Confusion everywhere. Yeah. 7 minutes later, all done cool down, brother. Police don't go away, army don't disappear. Them leave sorrow, tears, and blood.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Eniedi Okure, who is the Executive Director of Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. Born in Nigeria, he has served in various pastoral capacities in Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the United States. Welcome to Background Briefing, Eniedi Okure.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Eniedi, this incident that took place today, where a tanker truck overturned and people crowded in on it, trying to siphon off gasoline that was spilling all over the place, and apparently a lot of the people that did it were these little sort of motorized cab drivers, and then the thing exploded, and over 100 people were burned alive. It's obviously a tragedy, and there have been others like it. But it sort of opens a window into a broader problem, doesn't it, not, that is rampant in Nigeria, and that is oil theft.
Yeah, you are right, absolutely right. I would say that, what is happening here, as you say, underlines a much bigger problem. And the problem is that there is this atmosphere in the country of the lack of rule of law. And it is perpetrated by the higher-ups that gets a domino effect. So those lower just see what their leaders are doing, and they feel that they themselves could have a share in it. Okay, let's turn to what you've just said about this unfortunate incident. Where a tanker overturned and then leaking fuel, people rushing in to get a share of it. Imagine the mentality that I understand the security forces were there trying to push them back, but they would have none of it. They are rushing to get it. It's like, oh, let me go and get my share. After all, the bigger guys are stealing it. If I can get just a tiny little part of what is actually, quote, my share, then that's okay. So there is that attitude that has perverted the country, and they feel that they are entitled to it because of what is happening at the top. So oil theft in Nigeria, it's been going on for well over 3 decades, but it has become a very serious issue in the last 10, 15 years. You look at the amount of oil produced by the country and the actual revenue that comes from oil. It's about half. So what happens to the rest? It's being stolen, it's being diverted, it's being illegally transacted, and so the people end up with little or nothing.
Well, I was going to say, the Shell Oil Company, which is the biggest single producer in Nigeria, estimates that 150,000 barrels of crude are stolen in the country every day. And Nigeria's finance minister, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, has put the loss even higher in June.
About $1 billion a year. Yes.
Stolen. No, $1 billion a month.
$1 billion a month. In fact, more than $1 billion, because when you see the figure she gives, you are looking about $13 to $14 billion a year. Now, in fact, recently it's been discovered that the security forces in the Delta region have closed down about, listen to this, over 1,000 illegal oil refineries, even a petty makeshift oil refineries, within the Delta region in the past 5 months.
Wow. Well, you know, that isn't this a part of the problem, that the government made a peace treaty with MEND, M-E-N-D, the guerrillas that were operating in the Niger Delta?
In the Niger Delta region, yeah.
And these guys were capturing crews of oil tankers and oil workers, et cetera, and holding them in the jungle. And it looks like the deal that they made with MEND is a deal for the people who made the deal are in collusion with MEND in terms of criminality.
Yes, I mean that has been said. People say that yes, that the deal was not really a deal; it was just to end the conflict. But then they found other ways to do it. You look at what has happened, that the waterways has become, even after the so-called deal was made and the conflict was abated, that the waterways became even more, you know, patrolled. Despite the Navy patrolling the waterways, they are coming day after day after day with illegal traders, illegal bunkering that is going on, even in the high seas. And to the extent that it goes way up into the high seas, and people have connived and found ways of shifting it there and then having it stolen where it is beyond the reach of ordinary people. But having said that, I think that to return to what you underlined, that there is it hits at a larger problem. And I want to stay with that a little. There is a real pervasive problem here. You know, so that sometimes the very people who are sent to probe and clean it up end up being entangled with it. In fact, recently there is a report going on of the chair of the commission probing malpractice within the oil sector. And months into the probe, he himself is accused of taking about $500,000 bribe to alter report and all of that. So you wonder, when you have that kind of involvement, how are we going to clean this up? There's a real lack of accountability in the oil sector. And I dare to say that Nigeria would have been a better country if oil was not discovered. And I say that very strongly. I can give several reasons for that.
Well, there's a term for that, NEAD Akure. The term is a resource curse.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's a resource curse, because if one looks at the history of Nigeria, the oil sector is the single most corrupting agent in that country. First of all, in terms of what it does for the people, you look at the agricultural sector got depleted because of oil, because of the discovery of oil. Nigeria used to export palm oil and kernel, sorghum, cotton, rice and beans, cocoa, all that were abandoned when oil was discovered. Why? Because the politicians found out that they could easily make a deal with oil and become millionaires overnight. So gradually, the agricultural sector was decimated. Nigeria now imports food, including those it used to export before the discovery of oil. And there are some who argue that if oil had not been discovered, there would not have been a civil war in that country. Again, not to talk of the environmental damage from oil spills, both in the waters and on land. And the creek area with all that ecosystem has been decimated. You know, mangrove swamp that is pervasive in the Delta region, from Warri through Port Harcourt into Calabar, and it's been spoiled almost completely from oil spills. So it becomes each time you look at even state governors who steal money, generally from the oil revenue. So it's really become a curse. And the pervasiveness is so great that one wonders how this is going to be tackled. Politicians and their friends set up bogus companies for oil business. Some of them, they exist, and some are companies that have absolutely nothing to do with oil. For instance, last year, around November last year, an investigation into, quote, what it was dubbed in Nigeria, the oil cartel. You know, it sounds like the Colombian drug cartel, but that's how they dubbed it, oil cartel. An investigation revealed that many companies sharing in the oil business who were getting contracts and money were actually construction companies that had nothing to do with oil. And yet some of them got shares from the oil that they were, quote, importing or exporting, totaling about $10 billion within a period of 5 months.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Eniedi Akure, who is the Executive Director of Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. He was born in Nigeria and has served in various pastoral capacities in Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the United States. So on top of the enormous corruption in Nigeria, you have the terrorist threat from Boko Haram, you have intercommunal violence, and then you've got this outrage that we're talking about, the theft of the nation's key resource by these indigenous criminal enterprises that are often hybrids of criminals, security people, and politicians. You mentioned the number of illegal oil refineries in the bush. Little wonder there's so much pollution. What I would find extraordinary to figure out, since about half of the oil is stolen that you mentioned earlier, Eniedi, tell me about how you have a network of, it's called bunkering, I believe, in Nigeria, but how do you have a network of a criminal enterprise that takes the stolen oil and gets it to market? How does that operate? Do they have kind of ghost tankers that come in at night and they fill them up?
You know, some of it, yeah. You know, of course, for people to do that, you talk of artisan refineries. Those ones are really the little guys at the end of it. The stealing is real high-tech because, there was last year a documentation from Al Jazeera showing how some of these high-tech engineers connected with management in the oil sector, they will go into the pipe late in the night into the pipes, and they know how to let out the oil and siphon it out as they come through the oil wells, siphon them out and take it by boat to something else and distribute and sell it to these small guys who go into the small refineries. So it's really a high-tech theft in the first place, which tells us that there are people in high places orchestrating it because the small guys can't just afford to do what is being done. So it's not a matter of it's a question. They need an analogy here. It's like the little guys who run drugs on the street, you know? And you know that there's some big man somewhere controlling the cell. That's what is happening here. In fact, that's why some Nigerians are calling it the oil cartel, you know, comparing it to the drug market.
Well, but if you make that comparison to the drug market, you get back to the idea of the kingpins and the idea that there's demand. And we know that, and of course, this is the tragedy with Mexico. 50, 60,000 Mexicans are killed because the Americans have a drug habit. In this case, I'm curious to know about these people who know how to divert and siphon off the oil through the pipes into illegal tankers, either on the ground or in the ocean. So there must be a global market for illegal oil, because I understand, you know, under the sanctions that Iran's having now, they're offering black market oil as well. So I'd be curious to know how the black market, the global black market in oil works. Do you know anybody that has studied that?
Well, I don't have a study right now, but, you know, but from what I know, I would say that, you know, it started with precisely that people who were in higher places will divert some of the oil. And say, for example, you know, I own a, I'm in charge of this oil well, and you are the partner. And then I will make you sign that you received 10 barrels, when in fact it was 15. And that 15 goes to me. You know, that's how it started. And it still is, to the extent that, in fact, during the military days, you know, a lot of military generals, you know, got rich overnight, billionaires overnight doing that. And so that culture has continued that, yeah, the kingpins, absolutely, that the kingpins who have the wherewithal, who know how to, you know, siphon it, and who know how to transport it, and who know how to take it abroad. In fact, some of them even have, there have been reports of them having actually tankers themselves and siphoning it and taking it out to the global market and selling them illegally for cheap. And there have been also accusations that the oil companies have been in collaboration with these big people who, because they collaborate with them so they can allow them to continue to have access to the oil wells.
Sure, and they probably get discounted stolen oil. It's probably cheaper.
Absolutely, that's right. The point.
Yes. That's the point, right? Well, look, I'm afraid we've run out of time. This is a fascinating discussion, Anide, and we should stay in touch. And I'd like to learn more about this.
All right, then. Thank you. You have a wonderful night.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Anide Okure, who is Executive Director of Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. He was born in Nigeria and has served in various pastoral capacities in Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the United States. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Farhan Mohammed. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Disappeared by half.